If you place a thing in the center of your life that lacks the power to nourish, it will eventually poison everything that you are and destroy you. As simple a thing as an idea or your perspective on yourself or the world, no one can be the source of your content. It lies within, in the center.
I'll be with Mellow while you're thinking what to slide through. Only with Mellow while you're thinking what to slide through.
Don't let nothing ride you.
If the sun or the moon should give way to doubt,
they would immediately go out.
One swallow don't make a summer,
but tomorrow has to start somewhere.
Newspapers entertain, lion tamers die in pain. This child, wise beyond words, whose tears flow without cease.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. My very special guest is still Dr. Carolyn Baker from carolynbaker.net. Now, I wanted to know, how do you feel the interview has been going so far? Because for me personally, this has actually been like quite a one of those higher brow discussions where you actually kind of you learn a lot about yourself through listening to other people explain themselves. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I've thoroughly enjoyed our conversation, and I think that sometimes when I am speaking with other people, I learn a whole lot more about myself by listening to them explain themselves. So, and it's this kind of dialogue. And we're part of what we're doing here, Vinny, is creating community. You know, this is part of what community looks like.
Yeah. I mean, I go to lots of protests all the time, and you always go, this is what democracy looks like. Well, hold on. Ironically, they're actually telling the truth, because a protest is exactly what mob rule looks like.
Indeed.
I just found that really classic, because people don't even know what it is that they're doing. They don't even know what it is that they're saying, and it's really quite it's always refreshing and invigorating to talk to people like you who have a reasonable handle or lid on things and what have you, and have been and seen been through many years and seen many things in such a way that it's wisdom and intelligence that the world is so often deprived of, because the people who are running the media game and what have you, who would ordinarily be the ones interviewing people like yourself, are so dumb that they don't even know of your existence, let alone understand what the hell you're talking about.
Well, you know, I want to respond to that, because what you're talking about, and you said the word wisdom, and that's the magic word, I believe, because what we're really looking for, I say, bottom line in this collapse process, is we're deeply searching the deeper self. And I have a favorite poem about this by David White, who's a Welshman, and he does a lot of work in the U.S. And this little poem is called Loaves and Fishes. And I think of this a lot when I'm surfing the internet or I'm doing what I do on the computer. He says, "This is not the age of information. This is not the age of information. Forget the news and the radio and the blurred screen. This is the time of loaves and fishes. People are hungry, and one good word is bread for a thousand." Mm. And so the one good word he's talking about is that conversations like we're having right now that take us to the deeper self. John O'Donohue, another fabulous poet from Ireland, said, "This is the art of the soul, to harvest your deeper life from all the seasons of your experience." And for me, that's what it's all about. Whether it's doing a radio interview, or whether it's putting out information in the news, being in a protest, writing an article, it's all about that deeper self. Because let me just kind of explain what I explain in a lot of my workshops. You know, in traditional indigenous societies, when a child is born, It's not just, oh, a child is born. They're aware of the conception of this child and the gestation of this child from the very beginning. And, you know, in some cultures, they actually listen at the mother's belly to try to see what the child is bringing into the world. And so, you know, they know that this child is bringing gifts, the child's bringing genius, and the job of the community is to nurture that. So the child comes in, and he or she is prepared almost immediately for this watershed moment in his or her life around puberty when he or she will be initiated. And the purpose of that initiation is not just to prove some macho ordeal, but to be taken out in nature to have this ordeal so that he or she will have to reach very down deep into the soul to see what they're made of. And to really find that sacred self. Then the child is brought back to the community. There's a huge celebration. The elders have been with the kid for the whole time. And they say, boy, I see this gift. I see this opportunity. I see this skill that you have. We want to nurture that in you. And so that is all nurtured by the community. And that person becomes more mature. They grow into an adult and then eventually become an elder themselves so that they can do that for the younger people. So my point here is that what I believe is that what we are experiencing right now in this collapse is a planetary initiation where humanity is being taken out into this ordeal. And we're having to reach down deep and find out who we are and what the purpose of our existence is. Most people won't do that. Some people will. And in that way, consciousness can be transformed, and there's a possibility that we might create a new species, that we might create a new kind of human being who will never again have the capacity to allow what has been allowed on this planet to happen. That's one perspective.
Well, it's good, and I think... raising children, like, I really want to be a father. I've wanted to actually have kids since I was about 14. Like, I really wanted to help raise kids, and haven't yet. 29, still working on it. And I've been talking to a lot of my friends who are fathers, and one thing that they all seem to have to deal with is their life is no longer just their own life. Their life is actually almost exclusively there, not to just live, but to protect and foster and help their child grow in this world. And this is the inherent responsibility, you know, where people always talk about the parents not being responsible and so on and so forth. And that is probably the crux of it. This is why the New World Order targets the family massively. Because if you can... I think Germany practiced this quite well. In fact, they managed to indoctrinate children to not see their parents as their parents anymore, but they managed to see the Chancellor as the father, and the state itself as their mother. If you can disassociate people from real parental instincts and replace it with something else, you destroy everything that is good and potentially capable within that child. And that's the very agenda, because it's our genius and our creativity and our love and our caring and our ability to suffer and overcome that is the very antithesis of evil.
And if we had some sort of rite of passage rituals for young people, that couldn't happen. You know?
Well, you know what we have? We have a 21st party where you drink a yard glass.
Right, exactly.
That's your rite of passage. Yeah. You know, you turn 21 and you drink large quantities of beer. Yeah, you're an adult.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Right. I know.
Yeah,
it's laughable and it's tragic.
but it's awesome to do. And as long as it's done in context, you know, I don't know about you when you were younger, but when I was a little bit younger, I guess I'm still pretty young now, but I like to party, I like to drink, I like to smoke.
Yep.
You know, there's nothing inherently wrong with that. So long as you're not just doing it to excess for no good reason whatsoever, there's sometimes where you just feel like, you know what? Bracket. I'm going to get really drunk tonight because I'm just effed off at everything and I'm just going to get really, really pissed. And then you wake up the next morning without a hangover, not feeling depressed at all. Okay? Yeah. You know, and it's that really strange sensation of knowing that you almost can imbibe in things that should ordinarily hurt you and destroy you or something, but because your intention is different, your intention isn't just to get wasted for the sake of being wasted, you actually have a reason for doing it. That's actually reasonably healthy. Many ancient cultures used to imbibe in certain substances at certain times in their lives and what have you. I mean, I had a friend who was... of a long line of Celtic druids, and indeed his family gave him a magic mushroom trip as a rite of passage, and guided him through it as a sort of like a spiritual thing, you know, that kind of thing. You have in Mexican culture, you have mezcal and peyote in Amazonian, you know, you have ayahuasca and what have you. And it's occurred to me that the ingestion of substances accomplishes one thing, a skewed vision of reality. Now, a skewed vision of reality can either be a good thing or a bad thing. Are you skewing your vision of reality so that when you come back to it, you see it a hell of a lot more clearly and you really see it for what it is? Or are you trying to skew your vision of reality because you don't like it and you're trying to escape from it?
That's a really good question, and I think that those hallucinogenic experiences are very valuable, but I think they're only a step, and that we have to go further in the spiritual journey, in the journey inward to the deeper self, you know, kind of launching perhaps from those experiences, but taking them much further.
Yeah, indeed.
And without the substance.
And I think my brother told me of a what are they called? Are they called shaman or yogi or a guru? Sorry, in India, and he was allegedly so spiritually enlightened that they gave him a tab of the world's strongest acid, and it did nothing. You know?
That's very believable. I've heard that story before.
And even if it's not true, it's still a good story. Mm-hmm. And it shows that one can achieve levels of spiritual awareness where substances that are made by man are nothing by comparison. You know, they don't compare. To be in direct touch with the divine is the most powerful drug of all. People say that love's the most powerful drug, and I don't think so. I think divinity is.
And
we struggle to find out.
Love is certainly part of divinity.
Oh, yeah.
But being able to access that sacred power within oneself is the greatest drug of all. But it's not a drug.
Yeah. Well, see, and we talked during the break about how we're all addicted to some kind of substance or whatever. Right. You know, it's part of our culture. You know, I'm addicted to coffee, and so are you, and we love it. Can't get away from it. Yeah. You know, I tried to give up coffee one time, but the headaches and the lethargic kind of nature and everything is just it was just too much. You know, I can. Stopping smoking cigarettes, done that a couple of times. It's actually not that difficult, you know. It's not painful. Right. It's not traumatic or whatever. Taking away coffee, on the other hand, it becomes an essential part of your life. It's almost like your adrenal glands don't work without it. You become so dependent on it, and this is what happens with a lot of people who are on pharmaceutical drugs and what have you. Is that come down? I watched a video of myself today protesting outside a child, youth and family services, our equivalent of the CPS, where I was talking about how they forcibly drug children with made-up mental disorders in order to justify it, and how sometimes those children, or even sometimes adults, will go off of that medication and they have a complete breakdown. Not because the medication was keeping them stable, but because it kept them dependent. And without that substance, their body was simply unable to function any longer. They grow it on you. And this is what's happening to society now. We're becoming dependent on drugs, not because we actually want to have a good time and we want to actually go through a rite of passage or anything like that. We just want it just to stay normal, ironically enough.
Well, you know, Jung said that there are sacred initiations, like the rite of passage that I spent a lot of time describing, and there are profane initiations. And most of the initiations in our culture are profane ones, in which we don't, the purpose is not to access any kind of spiritual core. The purpose is to escape, or the purpose is to feel good, or, you know, feel better about ourselves, or whatever, or because somebody has told us that we need that particular drug in order to function. So, we, you know, the world is filled with profane initiations and really in a dearth of sacred ones.
Well, I think the world itself is becoming merely a kind of a cosmic profanity in and of itself. No other species is doing that to this planet. Only
That's
us.
Right.
You know,
that's right.
And this goes back to where we started off in the beginning, talking about personal responsibility, because I think it's like, here's a good story here. My brother told me this one as well a number of years ago about the origin of the drug ecstasy. You know how they call it E? Apparently, the E originally stood for empathy. And it was a drug that was given to violent fathers. They'd go home to their children, pop an E, and they'd never lay a hand on them again. So effective was it that they made it illegal. You know, and that was actually quite profound for me to hear that, because it occurs to me that we are losing as a human race our empathy for other people. We stop caring about other people. We're becoming self-centered and shallow, I think. You know, so many of us suffer from this terrible shallowness that is so disgusting. It's like black mold on the walls of a home, eating it away and poisoning everybody that walks into it.
Well, again, it's that absence of community, because one of the things community does is it helps us care about other people and realize that we're not the center of the universe. And when we don't have that, you know, in these narcissistic developing countries, then we lose all empathy. And, you know, we become the center of the universe. And, you know, you look at, you know, most animals live in community. And you look at some of the stories, you see viral videos on YouTube all the time of animals that, you know, one will die and the other one will just stay there and stay there and stay there for hours and days beside the dead body of that other animal. You know, it's like you don't see that kind of loyalty in the human species that much.
In fact, there are many... There's so many examples of the human species doing these amazing acts of empathy and love and caring and what have you. But what does the news report on? Death,
exactly.
War, destruction, murder, disease, and here's a fluffy kitten.
That's true.
Yeah. Now it...
I don't mean to sound as if, you know, as if humans, because we have this great capacity for compassion. And, you know, when we wake up and we really start looking at collapse, we really start looking at the truth of the situation of our planet, we're just going to invariably experience more compassion, I think.
Well, it's kind of like, in a lot of ways, wasted capacity. Like, let's say, for example, the human race is a Hummer. Okay? Mm-hmm. It's a vehicle with great capacity. It can haul a lot of things and what have you. But people ain't using it for what it's meant for. They just think it's like some kind of a trinket, some kind of a status symbol. Mm-hmm. And it was this Bernaysian propagandistic sort of advertising revolution that happened in the 20s and 30s that stopped people from, as you so rightly say, participating quite so much in their communities for their sense of happiness and joy and fulfillment, and instead try to insulate themselves and replace their communities and their friends and their family with items that they think will make them happy, and then they become so surprised that they're miserable, even though they have everything that they thought that they wanted.
You bet. Absolutely. Absolutely.
What do you do when you wake up to that? What do you do?
What do you do when you wake up to the emptiness of things? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Well, you know, a lot of people do wake up to the emptiness of things, and they begin looking inside, you know, because that's where you look. That's what the things are about. The things are about taking your attention out there so you don't have to really feel what's in here or look at what's in here. So many people are afraid of what's in here. And they understand the darkness that's in there, but they've never really found the gold that is in there. And so things keep us from making that discovery. And it's really a beautiful experience to watch people, you know, go, well, those things never really made me happy. There's something deeper. There's something more profound. And that's what I prefer these days. It's beautiful to see people. Come to that place.
It's kind of like country music in a way, you know. Some of the greatest music and profound things comes out of enormous suffering and loss and what have you. There's a great song called Divorce, I think it is. It says, my wife got the gold mine and I got the shaft.
Yeah. Yes, I know that one.
Yeah, and again, one of the important things that I've found is it's actually a survival mechanism, and I don't think you can actually really truly be human without this. Humor.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And, you know, in all of my work, I emphasize hugely the importance of humor and creating beauty. You know, creating beauty wherever we go, and we can do it in simple ways. We don't have to all be Picassos. We don't have to be Beethovens. But we can create beauty in small ways in our lives, and I call it inflicting joy on other people as much as possible. And I really appreciate your humor, Vinny, in this interview. It's made it a lot easier to talk about what I want to talk about.
Yeah. Well, I always said that if you want to kind of, almost like the darkness of this world is kind of like a barrel full of water, and you're sticking your head into it and you can't breathe in there and what have you. Mm-hmm. Having humor is like a scuba tank.
Absolutely. That's a really good analogy. I like that.
It allows you to breathe underwater. It allows you to see light through the dark. It is the antithesis, and it's really, really valuable. And you notice that the humor of the elite is very, very different from the humor of people like you and I. They don't laugh with you. They laugh at you.
Exactly.
And only at you.
Mm-hmm. It's all about ego and arrogance. Yeah. Whereas, you know, the humor this applies to the art as well. You were talking about the country music. The humor and the art of people who live kind of in the dregs and in the deeper places is so much richer, and it's much more about empathy and compassion.
Here's an interesting story. You know what my first job was? My first employment was writing, directing, and producing my own play.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And I was 19 years old, and all of my friends were a bit younger than I, 14, 15, 16, 17, you know, that kind of thing. And they were, incidentally, all the best young actors in the small little town that I was working on. So I got them all together, got them to rehearse. This is on summer holidays and what have you, just after I'd finished high school. And what occurred to me was that it's actually really, really hard to organize other people to get your vision. All right, you know, this is my vision, but I need other people to fulfill it. However, I said that there's only one point of success. It's not necessarily the money that I will get from this place so that I can go to university. That was my entire point of doing it. It wasn't necessarily whether or not my friends appreciated me after the fact. I'm no longer in contact with any of them at all.
Mm-hmm.
It was about making somebody cry, make them feel something. Mm-hmm. Feel something mm-hmm. real,
mm-hmm.
and I did,
mm-hmm.
and that was something that I've defined as the one point where you know that a piece of art has been effective and works for what it is used for. Okay,
absolutely.
If you can make somebody cry, if you can physically induce a response mm-hmm. based upon people's empathy, that is the pinnacle of the success of any artwork, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more.
Mm-hmm. If you can't get that real painful emotion through to people, if you can't get them to really feel it, you're not making anything of value.
Well, you know, art and all of that really that you're talking about, just it taps into our humanity. This is what it means to be human. And, you know, we're losing so much of that. And so to bring that back is part of the transformation of our species that I see really needing to happen.
Do you believe we're on the cusp of a renaissance?
On the one hand, yeah. On the other hand, I mean, I think it's a real both and thing again. I think we're going to have to go deep, deep, deep into darkness on this planet. We may be facing near-term extinction by mid-century. I don't know. But I think there are going to be pockets of places where people will survive, and there will be opportunity to create an entirely next culture that is completely different from this one.
Evolved, in other words.
Yeah, and evolved as a result of suffering. That's where real evolution happens, is out of our suffering.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this is the self-discovery. I think it's as you have traumas and pain in your life, you start to recognize what it is you're capable of actually happening to you and surviving, right?
Yes.
Have you ever seen that Disney movie Aladdin?
I think I did, yeah, a few years ago. Refresh my memory.
Okay, there's a part in it where Jafar, the evil villain and what have you, he gets turned into a genie. He wishes the genie to turn him into the most powerful genie in the world. And he then turns into this genie, and he's about to kill him and everything like that. And the good genie says, "Don't worry, bro, he's a genie. He can't kill anybody." And then he gets blasted with flame, and he goes, "Ah! But you'll be surprised what you can live through." And that's kind of what I think is so powerful and really important about growing up and just living life itself, is just knowing what it is that you're capable of living through.
Absolutely. I totally agree.
I think that's what gives you the appreciation for life itself.
You bet.
All right. Well, it's been emotional. And somewhat fabulous. And,
well, you felt something, huh?
Yeah, I did indeed. And I want to thank you very much from the bottom of my heart, maybe somewhere near the cockles, maybe above the cockles, some, I don't know. But
Could I just give you a little screenshot of my book, Collapsing Consciously, Transformative Truths for Turbulent Times?
Absolutely. The show's kind of like a bathtub. It doesn't work very well without a plug.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I got it.
We got it. We got that. we got everything sussed, and I just want to thank you not only for your time and sharing this with me and your expertise and your wisdom, but just in general, I appreciate the person that you are and what it is that you do and why you do it.
Thank you so much, Vinny, and thank you for having me on the show.
No worries. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. Archives are at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com with many, many interviews. It occurs to me that my radio career has spanned 5 years already. Yeah. I was like looking at that this morning. I was like, yes! I mean, not technically 5 years, you know. It's only like a little over 3.5, you know, kind of thing. But never mind. Through the end of 2010, through the start of 2014, technically that's 5 years spanned.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. I was quite proud of that. And, yeah, sometimes you do just have to stop doing what you're doing and just look back at what it is you've accomplished.
Yes, indeed.
Sometimes you've got to appreciate what you have in order to know that you've really come a long way. Thank you very much, Carolyn, and you have yourself a lovely evening.
You too, Vinny.
Bye-bye.
You are the only exception for you.